This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 6, Episode 14. Approach the Coach. On this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, we talk about the best way to get in touch with a coach, either face-to-face or remotely, to get help them to help you. We also talk about the intensity and innovation of coaching in cricket and whether tennis might be better. And we find out the perfect way to practice. All that and more coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. Welcome to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. This is your guide, your weekly guide, in audio form to coaching better cricket or to playing better cricket. My name is David Hinchliffe. I look after things here and over at the Pitch Vision Academy website. And I'm joined, as usual, by two very fine cricket coaches. The first of which, sounds like he's enjoying a coffee in the background or something there. It's the Director of Cricket Coaching at Millfield School. It's Mark Garraway. Hello, Garris.
I am enjoying a coffee. Very good spot. Well done, Sherlock.
Yes, well, you know, you can tell just by the way that the cup was put down on the desk that it was full of sweet, sweet caffeine.
Well, that's where you're wrong, because it's nearly empty, so you didn't deduct that, did you?
Well, I might have been lying. And also on the line, not from his usual location, which is Portsmouth Grammar School, but
Co-op.
From Co-op, as it was last week. Yes, that laugh is Sam Lavery. Hello, Lavers, where are you?
I'm at Charterhouse School today. Which is lovely, sun shining and pitch conditions look fantastic. So, lovely setting. It's a Surrey trial day, so there are a mixture of a few staff players and a dozen or so trialists having a bit of cricket, which is great to see. Yeah, lovely setting for it today.
Yeah, we've been pretty good with the weather in the last few days here as well. I had my first session with my new club last night, and it went very well. And the weather was fantastic. And I said to them, "Of course, being in Glasgow, it's always like this, isn't it? In the summer, there's never a torrential rain around here. It's always going to be as nice as this." And they assured me that it's like going to be like this for the rest of the summer.
Well, that would be lovely, wouldn't it? That would be awesome.
But one of the things that we do on this show, as we try and do on this show anyway, is to help people with their cricket or with their cricket coaching. And one of the most common questions that certainly Pitch Vision Academy get asked is for people for wanting help with having a chance to play. This is a very common question that we get in. Please, can you give me a chance to play? And I applaud that enthusiasm. Greatly, the passion to make it to the next level is great from a lot of people who contact us. But it's frustrating for me because very often the way that the help has been asked for means that there's not really a lot I can do. If someone sends me an email and says, "Please, can you give me a chance to play?" I don't really know what to do with that. So I guess from my point of view, and I'm sure you chaps have come across this as well, when somebody contacts you for help and advice, there are ways that are better than other ways of being able to get that. So from a coach's point of view, if somebody wants to get help and advice, what would you advise would be the best way to approach a coach or someone that you trust to be able to give you some advice?
Well, I think there's a couple of things in this, David, and I know the kinds of messages that you get hell of a lot of through the show and through the website. And a lot of them are just a question saying, "Help me to get cricket." And I think what would help you, and certainly would help me if I was in your situation, would be some detail around that, or detail around where you are, what you've tried previously, what your experiences have been to date, and just be a little bit more specific with the question, because really what you're doing is you're making that initial contact, but you're relying on David in this case, or me if you send me an email, to then respond. It's a lot easier to respond if we've got something to go back at you with, you know, rather than us having to answer all of the questions, really, or ask all of the questions. So what I suggest you do is, if you're going to write in to anybody, whether it be to Pitch Vision or whether it be a variety of different coaching portals or websites around the world, is to actually list down some things that you're looking to get out of that interaction. Look at the things that you want to try and find out. Do you want to find a club? Do you want to find a respected coach in that area? Is there something more specific, like, I'm a bowler, I want to get better at bowling fast. Who should I go to, say, in Pakistan, or who should I go to in India? Then we're in a position that we can actually do something with those questions rather than just merely having a list of people saying, I want to play cricket, which is what we get a lot of.
And how that is extremely common, I agree with you there, Gareth. And Lavers, how does that change when you're talking about somebody who is coming to ask you specifically for help face-to-face? Perhaps they're just asking for advice on who they can get in their area, but they manage to get a face-to-face conversation with you. Or maybe you're working with them yourself and somebody's asking for some specific help. How does that change? How can someone ask for help in the right way there?
Well, once they do that and they are in a face-to-face situation, it does accelerate the process a lot. So as Gareth said, if you don't get a lot of information, then there's a long drawn-out process of trying to get the appropriate information out of someone, which if you're face-to-face with them is a lot easier. So you can very quickly put them in a position where they need to give you the right information, and they can you can ask them the right questions there and then. It's a lot simpler to do. So if you are lucky enough to get in a position face-to-face with someone who can potentially help you, then you're in a much better place. How you then approach it is, again, specificity. So trying to be as clear as you can in what you're trying to achieve. And also trying to make sure that what you're asking to achieve is something that, as a goal, is just like any other goal. It's realistic. It's something that you feel you can achieve. And it's not something that is beyond all imagination. So a lot of the time it is people asking to be international cricketers or first class cricketers, when in all reality they're probably not that close to achieving it. However, if someone asks you for some specific help with a certain part of their game, so they're looking to develop a specific area of their batting or their bowling, or they just want some general advice on an area of their game, then it makes it a little bit easier, and suddenly you can actually give an answer that is going to be relevant and is going to have some benefit to them in their development. So being specific is very, very useful, but also being appropriate and talking around a subject where there's real gains to be made makes the whole process a lot more effective as well.
One thing I've noticed when it comes to coaching people at club level as well is that there's a certain attitude sometimes where people will expect things rather than, and have an entitlement to things rather than feeling like they need to work towards something. So when they come, a player will come to you under the guise of advice, but really what they're trying to do is sell themselves to you because, you know, because they feel like they should be opening the bowling for the first team, and it's just a matter of convincing the coach to believe the same thing as them, rather than coming with the idea of, what do I need to do to become the guy who opens the bowling for the first team? I think that's an important distinction as well for people to know the difference between a sense of entitlement and setting a target.
That's a really good point, David. If you go to a coach, and you might not, so that's a great coaching example, isn't it? You know, you might think you should be doing something, opening the batting, opening the bowling, batting four, captain in the side, whatever it case may be. But go there instead of, trying to say, why am I not? Go there armed with the knowledge that you aren't opening the bowling, and ask the question, what do I need to be able to do? What skills do I need to do? What do I need to be able to show you in order to give myself the best chance of opening the bowling the next time the opportunity comes up? And that's a fantastic approach and attitude to take into any coaching or working environment, and any coaching and working relationship and interaction. I think that's a fantastic point you just made.
going back to the original point as well, the idea of saying I want to be a cricketer, I want to play cricket. The underlying assumption of that is that I've told you what I want. Now it's over to you to do the rest. And of course, that's not how development works. The player needs to develop themselves. The coach is there to facilitate that, but it's up to the player to make those moves and make those developments. And if you assume that contacting a coach, speaking to a coach, whether it's face-to-face or via email or telephone or any of the thousands of ways you can speak to people now, it does need to be done within the context of taking responsibility for your own development with a coach who can help you, rather than assuming that just telling the coach what you want and then the coach will be able to give it to you.
Yeah, I think it's a lot better if you can, rather than saying, give me something, it's a lot better to say, how can I improve something, or how can I prove that I am good enough to do something? So what's the pathway for me to get from where I am to where I want to be, in terms of who do I speak to, who have I got to prove myself to, or how do I get better? They're two areas that coaches can often help with, whereas give me a chance shortens the conversation, because it's often going to be a no, because there's no reason for someone who doesn't know you to give you a chance. So you've got to play a slightly longer game, and you've got to think less about this one person is going to be the person who gives you the break, and more about how can this one person actually help me improve, which in turn will give me the break.
The coach is a consultant, isn't he? That's what Fletcher always used to say. Duncan Fletcher used to say to every player, look, it's up to you. You make your own decisions. You're your own private licensed company, I suppose. What we are here as a group of coaches is to be your consultant. So you make better decisions. So the decisions that you make are more informed rather than less informed. And that's exactly the way that the best coaches operate, and more importantly than that, in relation to this question, it's the way that the best players operate around those coaches. And I think there's a real art to being a player. We talk about the art of coaching and the art of captaincy. In this world of lots of information and lots of avenues for people to get information, there's also an art to being a player and taking that information and using it most wisely.
Let's finish up this section with the yes no round. Three questions that can only be answered yes or no to, no matter how much more that the team want to say. I've got the questions, so when you're ready, guys, let's start. First question. Session plans are always written out.
No.
No.
Second question. What's difficult is scarce, and what's scarce is valuable.
Yes.
Yes.
Third question. Fitness improves skills.
Yes.
Yes.
Now, this portion of the show is all about the listeners of the show, or possibly the readers to the Pitch Vision Academy website, because we get questions sent in every week. We pick a couple of those questions and we answer them on the show. And then we decide on the best question and we give that winner a prize. It's an online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And you can email us on coach@pitchvision.com if you have a question. And we've got other contact details towards the end of the show. First question's from Hugh. And Hugh's in a combative mood, I think, because he says, why is it so hard to find cricket coaching with the intensity and innovation of other sports, such as tennis? So do we think that cricket is behind when it comes to other sports, innovation and intensity?
Well, I suppose in the question, it says that the statement is that it is. I think coaching, whether it's tennis or whether it's cricket, whether it's football, whether it's rugby, is largely about innovation nowadays, particularly when you're working with younger players. But it is very much an individual thing in terms of the coach that's working with players. And so I don't think it's tennis en masse is particularly more innovative than cricket. I think that it's the coaches that obviously are around around you are either more innovative or less innovative as in nature, really. And so I would suggest by talking to this show, you're likely to have talking back at you some guys that are into innovation that are always trying to evolve and adapt and keep up with the latest thing, and even maybe starting the latest thing and something like Pitch Vision as a product in terms of the sensors and the feedback systems is highly innovative and highly or very well priced within the market. And that, and as far as I'm aware, there isn't anything out there other than at the top end of a game in tennis that could even match some of the feedback systems that we've got within Pitch Vision and all of its different resources that are available to it. So I would say that it sounds to me as if you're not you've not got a huge amount of innovative cricket coaches around you, but I wouldn't say that that was necessarily indicative of the market. And certainly I would suggest that Sam is a highly innovative coach. I know you are, David, and every now and again I come up with something which has got a bit of innovation to it. But you know, I don't see enough of other coaches that don't do it. All of the coaches that I work around within the game through our coach education program in the UK are definitely on the innovation trail. So, you know, I'd be interested to hear more, going back to our questioning before, more about your experiences to date within coaching, because it's not been something that I can say I've seen a great deal of, or us lacking in innovation and intensity, because I think there's some great examples around me and that I see, and I'll be interested in Sam's view on it.
Well, Lavers, let's play a slight game here of read the question asker's mind by assuming that Gareth is right, that this, the question comes from the environment where this coach, where this chap is. I kind of assume he's a coach, but he might not be. Anyway, the environment that he's in is much more based around the more traditional style of coaching, where we do it the way that we've always done it, and that is, you know, that's fine because it's worked for 200 years or whatever the number is. So let's assume that. How can somebody who feels like they want more innovation in their environment, but they can't get it because they feel held back by people with more traditional views, what can someone in that environment do?
Okay, well, first of all, it is going to depend on what your role is. Are you a player who's seeking more variation and challenge and intensity, or in this case, more variation to what's going on? Or are you a coach who fits into a group and maybe sees that there's a lack of it going on around you? So it's going to depend on what your role is. But either way, there's always an opportunity for you to have an impact on your environment from within. So if you are in a group of coaches, maybe try and introduce something that you would like to lead, and say, bring in something new that you can then try and measure. So is there something you can bring in and say, look, this is what the objective of this session is, and this is how we're going to try and measure that this is going to be an improvement. And maybe there's something we can bring in that is going to do that. I think also you can look at introducing examples of other people and the type of approach they bring to coaching, and look at the successes they have, or look at the successes their players have. I do think that there probably are people out there who are stuck in their ways. However, I'm inclined to agree with Gareth that a lot of the people I speak to are quite keen to move forwards and try new things and experiment as coaches. So I do think there are people out there who do have the right attitude, whether it's the right attitude or the wrong attitude. People do have the attitude of let's try new things and let's try and take people away from their comfort zones. As has already been said, it's difficult to know when there's not as much information. I think impacting on people, like, can you say, right, this, give me, if you're working as a team and there are a number of sessions per week or a number of sessions per month or per season, so right, let's give me 10% of the sessions where we're just going to have complete creativity and innovation, or give me one session a month, or give me however many, and just see what it's doing. If we're doing one thing over and over again, are we going to get a big loss out of missing out on one of those sessions if it's the same sessions over and over again? Or is there potential for maybe adding some value to what we do through doing something different? So it's a bit of a marketing project or a sales project to try and sell something new to people around you. I guess that's one of the skills that we need to have as coaches, is selling things to our cricketers and explaining them well, and doing the same with coaches as well.
I'm gonna look at it a different way now from Hugh's perspective. So he's obviously comparing cricket to other sports here, both in intensity and innovation. And my question back, if a parent or a player came to me and gave me this question, would probably be something along the lines of, what is it that you've seen in those environments? What intensity, how did they go about bringing that intensity on? And what innovation have you seen that could be transferable into our sport? And by that, what we're doing as a coach is we're learning from somebody else's experience, because you can't have the view, which is a hardline view, as you quite rightly said, David, without that being backed up by some experience in that. So Hugh's obviously had some experience in other sports, and I'd be looking to try and glean some of that experience to help us to decide whether there is something that we can do to help that intensity. The other thing on intensity to me is length of practice sessions, and also the numbers of people involved. And I suppose when I look at tennis coaching around the country, I see good numbers of people playing tennis, but also quite high numbers of tennis coaches as well. Whereas in the cricket world, we generally operate around 1 to 10, don't we, in most club environments. So, you know, is that something that we can learn from, just by getting some more hands working alongside? And interestingly, on our last podcast, I was out in St. Lucia working with Andrew Strauss, but we also had a number of dads, some of which have got coaching badges, some of which were just really keen onlookers, to get them involved as well, because more hands makes light work, and also it gives more one-to-one or a small group feel to the sessions, which probably ups the intensity at the same time. So my first thing would be to ask you, what has you seen in other environments that we could learn from?
And that's a great way to pose the question as well, because you might find that actually the outcome is exactly that. Oh, there's a lot more one-to-one, or there's a lot more specificity to the individual, or there's a lot more individual conversation, or there's a lot more athlete-led practice sessions, whereas that may be so, and that may be a direct result of the physical numbers involved, that it's an individual sport, and the sessions are focused on one person as opposed to his experience of cricket, which is maybe largely group-led. So it may be simply down to that, but asking the question is a great way to throw it back and say, well, what do you see that's different, and how do you see it being applied to what we're trying to do?
And it could be something as simple as, there's an extremely good coach in tennis, and the coaches in the cricket environment aren't at that same level. So it appears that the tennis coach, because the tennis coach is operating at a very high level and would operate at a very high level no matter what sport they were in. It's just that they happen to be in tennis, and then you're comparing them directly to a coach who isn't at that level, and you're saying, well, obviously tennis is better, because look. Because in that example, tennis is better. And then the question becomes, what can the cricket coach learn from the tennis coach? And then, you know, obviously techniques are going to be different, but people are still people no matter what sport they play.
Absolutely, mate.
Next question is from Kurt. And Kurt says, my biggest problem is one of commitment to learning technique. It would do me well to work on my batting for an hour a week or more, but I've allowed myself to slide on account of I haven't yet found the best way to practice. This is one of those situations where good truly is the enemy of great. Because I can't practice perfectly, I'm not practicing at all. Can you help?
Well, my first question to you, Kurt, would be, I haven't found the best way to practice yet, and I'm still on that quest, and I'm going to keep going, and I reckon I probably won't ever find it, to be brutally honest with you, but I'm still going to keep going in the quest, I suppose, to find the perfect way to practice. But the more I coach, and the more I get better at coaching, the more I realise that there isn't necessarily a perfect way of practicing and preparing, and that would have been nice for me to know as a player when I was back doing what you're doing now, thinking about my cricket and thinking about getting better. And one of the things that really undermined me as a cricketer wasn't anything that anybody else did. It was just my quest for absolute perfection, and anything that fell under that, whether it be how somebody put a coaching session together, whether it be my particular technique on a shot, or the fact that the ball bounced slightly different when somebody threw a ball into me from the outfield and it went off at a different angle than I thought, and as a result it hit me on the thumb and went in rather than going smack bang in the middle. And I would let these things derail me, really, and erode my confidence and do what it sounds like it's happened here, which is erode my motivation for getting involved and working hard in the first place. So to me, mate, the difference between my playing and my coaching is that I'm on the quest to try and be as good as I possibly can, but I also accept that there's no such thing as a perfect practice session. And however much we plan and we prepare and we put these things together, I don't believe anybody has ever delivered the perfect coaching session, and I don't think they ever will. So if we put that back onto your cricket, my advice to you would be, get a bit of real perspective here, fella, and just play the game and learn as much as you can about yourself and practice as much as you can within the confines of yourself, but also cut yourself a little bit of slack, because you're never going to get 100, which is perfect. You're never going to have a net, which is absolutely perfect. And you're never going to practice in a way which it gets it spot on, because there are so many variables around a game of cricket and around human beings that make that really impossible. So to me, it's about gaining perspective rather than continually to look for that perfect practice and not finding it and getting demotivated as a result.
It's interesting if we look at what we practice for. And I asked you, David, you've just joined a new group of players. What do they practice for? What's the purpose of practicing?
Funny enough, I asked them that specific question last night when I was trying to find out that kind of thing. And for some guys, it is just a matter of, you know, they want to get out of the house and have a bit of a run around. And other guys are more focused on improving their performance on a Saturday, scoring more runs and taking more wickets.
And would you say that most people fall into those two categories? They're either there primarily for enjoyment, or they're there to get better at what they're doing?
Yeah, or some, even a combination of the two.
A combination of two. Mm-hmm. And in that case, then, if they're your targets, it's very easy to review the success you've had. Have you enjoyed what you've done? Yes. Are you marginally better than you were? Maybe that is a perfect session. I don't know. But if we're trying to take 10 steps forwards every session, that's just not going to happen, isn't it? So ultimately, we've got to think, why are we here and are we achieving it? We're here to enjoy it. Did you enjoy it? We're here to get better. Are you getting better? Okay, and I think we can keep it that simple. It sounds like he's just looking for the session that turns him from what he is into AB de Villiers, or even better than that if he's looking for perfection. And we've got to be more realistic about things.
It's interesting that the response to I can't do things perfectly is I'm not going to do anything at all. It doesn't matter how imperfect your practice is. If you're doing nothing, that's infinitely worse than doing the absolute worst practice that you can think of. Because at least if you're doing a practice which isn't much good, you're not getting any worse. Whereas if you don't do anything at all, you're going to be losing. The longer you go without practicing, the more you're going to be losing what you already have. Even if you're not getting better, even if you're just maintaining what you already have, that's still going to be better than just sitting around doing nothing and thinking, well, you know, one of these days I'm going to discover the perfect practice, and then we're talking. Then I'll get to nets an hour a week.
Yeah,
I'm not sure I totally agree with that, to be honest, because I think you can get better through not doing stuff. So,
and I think you can get worse through doing things.
Correct.
As well.
So I'm not 100% in agreement with that, David. Whilst I understand the sentiment of it, I can't sit here and totally agree with that. I've known lots and lots of players who have been injured and didn't necessarily go through the stringent rehab processes that that we now have in place around some of the professional sides that operate throughout the world. And yet they'd come back after literally sitting down and doing absolutely nothing for 6 months and just play completely different cricket. And a lot of the time sometimes people have to do that, because being out of the game of cricket makes you sometimes feel, crikey, you know, the next time I get an opportunity to play, I'm going to go for it because I've missed it so much. And sometimes doing nothing can be a really good thing. And in the same way, as Sam said, you know, how many times, and I had this discussion with Straussie last week a lot, and Straussie's now entering a little bit of coaching, you know, more to do with his understanding of the game, so it can help his commentary out and keep him connected with what's happening in the game. But at certain points in his career, he got a little bit anti-coaching because he felt that he was getting too much, and that was stifling what he was doing and stifling a number of people that were around him in the change room as well. So I'm not 100 on board with that. I think the key thing here for Kurt is that he's obviously somebody that mastery is really important. It sits within his motivations and the way he goes about stuff. And whilst mastery is great to aim for, you shouldn't become a slave to it. And I can talk about this from a playing perspective because that's exactly what I did as a player myself. And now my advice to players such as Kurt that are striving for perfection in whatever they're doing is the realisation that it's not out there. And you only have to look at the Manhattan skyline of results of Don Bradman and of Sachin Tendulkar, who were two reasonably good players in this game that you're playing, Kurt, to realise that they had a load of failures. At times in their career, they had technical flaws. Some of those times they were exposed as having technical flaws. Other times they just got away with it because they found a way to get through that. And three of Sachin Tendulkar's most favourite innings that he played during the whole of his Test career contained at least two drop catches and two opportunities that were missed by the opposition in it. And that is the reality of cricket. So, you know, have a really good look, have a really good think, mate, and watch a game of cricket really closely and see how much variability there is. And if that's the case in a game of cricket, then we've got to have that within our practice, otherwise we're not preparing for the right thing.
Lavis, did you want to say something about the idea that there is practice that you can do that is going to send you backwards?
That's something that is definitely apparent, and I'm not saying that I see it very often, but I remember being young, being asked to do things and being encouraged to do certain things, which I remember actually feel like didn't help me. And if it wasn't helping me, it wasn't making me better, then it was making me a worse cricketer. I actually remember being asked to shift my body weight in my stance when I was young, and that was going from my weight being reasonably evenly distributed between my feet to having quite a big pronounced forward lean, and I was probably 15 or 16 at the time, and I didn't question it. I was being told by a coach to do it, so I did it, and as a result of that, I did it for probably 3 or 4 weeks, and it didn't, I wouldn't say it had a massive impact on my performance, but I didn't feel like I could move, and I felt like I was being very limited in what I was doing. And as a result of that, I wasn't playing as fluently. I was still doing okay, but I wasn't having the same range of shots or the same movement or same consistency that I would normally have. So that's just one simple example of it's probably simply bad advice. It's something that someone said to me that they've had work for them, and they thought because it works for them, it'll work for me, and then it should give me success. But that's not actually how it happens, is it? So I think very simply, there's good advice and bad advice, and a lot of what we do as coaches is giving people advice, which we're giving them for one reason or another, and it doesn't always have a positive impact. It can sometimes be negative on them.
Soapbox time now on the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. What that means is a minute of time to talk for one of the members of the team. No one else can interrupt, and whatever they say, it's over to them. And this week, it's Mark Garraway. Garris, it's all you.
Well, this week I'm going to reintroduce something that normally happens every year, and it's my Get On With It rant and rave. And we're going to have one in the next couple of weeks because, as Sam will know, he's going back to school and we're going to get some new balls out, and the balls are going to deck about a little bit in the nets. And And often we get kids coming into the nets and they get all stroppy and they get all down when the ball beats the outside edge for the first time on a green wicket with a new ball. And then they'll say, oh, well, it's against my mates and it doesn't matter. It's all about what happens in the middle. But the bottom line is that we have these conditions in the nets and we'll have them out in the middle for the next few weeks. So it's really, really important that we're able to adapt and to take all of that training out of the nets to give ourselves the best chance of success. So the next time you see somebody at the outset of the season, whether it be now, because you're in the Northern Hemisphere, or in the Southern Hemisphere a bit later in the year, and somebody sees a ball goes past the outside edge and lets them derail the net, just please tell them, just get on with it, because that's what you're going to be facing when you get out to the middle.
And that is all we've got time for on the show this week. We are finished, but before we go, we're just going to decide on a couple of things, the first of which is the winner of this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show competition. So we had two questions, one from Hugh, which was about the intensity and innovation in cricket, and one from Kurt about practicing perfectly or not at all. Which one did you prefer this week, Gareth?
Well, I thought they were both good but complex questions. So I'm going to chuck out a challenge to Hugh, which is, give us a bit more, mate. Tell us a bit more about your experiences in other sports and what you've seen, and then we can have another discussion about that, and then that will put you in a great position to pick up a win and to get a course. So this week I'm going to go with Kurt's. And Kurt, I think Graham Gooch's one would be brilliant for you, because he was good at practicing. He was very good at practicing. Mm. But I think you'll find in his course that there will be two or three bits that make you realise that there's no such thing as a perfect practice. So that would be my advice, and Kurt wins it.
Congratulations to you, Kurt. You win the online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And Gareth, if someone else was listening, apart from Kurt, everybody else, and they wanted to send in their question, how would they do that and have the chance to win the prize?
Well, they could give us a call on 0203 239 7543 or drop us an email at coach@pitchvision.com.
That's right. Whose dog's that?
That's Rosie. That's Rosie just barking the number.
Just doing it for all the dogs listening. That's right. You can also get us through the social media. Facebook.com/Pitch Vision Academy is the first one of those. And if you want to get us on Twitter, then you can do so by looking for @PitchVisionAcad. You can also listen to the show every week by using your favourite podcast app to just search for Pitch Vision Academy. You'll find us in there. Just tap on that subscribe button to get going. And if you don't want to do that and you want to, say, listen to the show on the Pitch Vision Academy website, you can stream it by going to pitchvision.com/academy and clicking on the podcast link. And you've got all the details there for any way that you want to subscribe or listen. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week. But until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Lavers.
Cheers, fellas.